Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hello there. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Matt Fontana in for Jason Gibbs today on the board. And Wilhelm, earlier today, I spoke at the Hawkins Sports Camp over on the east side to all the young campers there about the Browns and what's going on. And we did a big Q&A session. And those guys, what they were the most concerned about, they want to know, these are kids, mind you.
What grades?
This is probably, I don't know the grades, but I want to say maybe like somewhere between
6 through 12?
Not that old. Probably 4th through 8th maybe.
Okay. Middle school.
Yeah. So their number one of the questions I got, which I thought was very interesting given everything that we've talked about, was, will the practices be more like football this year? This is from a little kid. I guess he came to training camp last year and came away unimpressed. So I was like, absolutely.
Him and us both.
Yes, him and I told the story of how last year you knew when we were giving, you know, second year undrafted free agents veteran days off that we were in big trouble.
Yes, I agree. And I mean, it's what I'm looking forward to. We are, what is today, the 28th?
Yeah.
29th. We are a month away, exactly 1 month away from the start of training camp.
Yep.
So, you know, and Jim Donovan 2 days ago, we talked about, you know, what are guys right now doing in the offseason? And I would imagine that, you know, the last 2 weeks was time off for them as well because we had an early start. And, of course, we finished early compared to other football teams. So I would hope that guys got away, took those vacations immediately, which allows them to get back to their city, wherever they reside, if it's not here in the Northeast Ohio area, and start slowly creeping back into some sort of routine. And that routine is putting the right things in your body. That's the nutrition aspect, you know, whittling down on the drinking over the course of the next 30 days. Again, we want you to enjoy yourself. You're human beings. You deserve it. You work hard. But that's putting the time in the weight room. That's putting time out on the track, out on the field to do the conditioning, some of the change of direction. What's encouraging to me is that some of the young players spoke about getting together in the offseason. And I know Corey Coleman, you know, seeking out RG3 to understand where he's at, going to visit him for 3 to 5 to 7 days, whatever that is. Those are all great signs. And I think that is kind of a changing of the guard that's happening here because all really good teams organically and naturally have those things already going on because, as we mentioned yesterday, same coach, same offensive coordinator, same defensive coordinator, same system. They just want to refine and refine, and then you add a young player, and then that player feels obligated to show up. That if Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, and Randall Cobb are doing it, and I'm the new guy, I better be there too. So, and I think even more so, to bridge that gap, as we heard from Cam Irving and Danny Shelton and some of the rookies, you know, what they do with their time away. And what the first offseason really is to allow them to come back in shape and to really not have these guys lose a lot mentally or physically is probably, I'm sure, what Adam Beard and his strength and conditioning staff really left these guys with.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see them get back and get to work. The other thing the kids really want to know about was who the most improved players were. Who are the guys that surprised us the most?
I know one who you said.
In the offseason. I said Terrell Pryor, night and day.
Justin Gilbert.
I said Cam Irving looks so much more comfortable at center. He seems to be a guy that you're going to be able to count on as a starter at that position. Again, we don't really know until the pads come on. And just for the people, I always ask you this because I do think it's relevant because you hear so much talk about, well, when the pads come on. What positions do you think you can get a better feel for with the pads off, and what positions do you absolutely need the pads on to have an idea of what they're capable of?
I think you get a good understanding about a player when the pads are off, though, from like the wide receivers and I think the quarterbacks because they're not going to be touched anyway. I think I love to see DBs play without the pads off because if they can play with the pads off and limit or control the production of a wide receiver with no pads, just imagine when you can be physical and get your hands on them. And that makes them emphasize the technique even more so. When it gets to, and now this is specific to our Cleveland Browns, when it gets specific to when the pads come on, I think offensive and defensive line is an absolute no-brainer because, and for me, it's what type of offensive line are we going to be? I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of zone track, you know, foot, you know, taking those zone steps. It's going to be a part of what we do, but it's not going to be who we are.
Yep.
These guys are going to have to go big on big, man on man, and win for Crowell and Duke Johnson to be able to run the football the way Hugh Jackson wants to run the football. Even furthermore, the one thing that you have to see is, and I know you've talked about it on Dog Pound Report, and we talked about it, you know, in depth with Ray Horton here, is the pass rushers. You know, to allow, how good is Emmanuel Ogba going to be? You know, is Paul Kruger going to be a guy that's going to be very productive for it? Nate Orchard, Barkevious Mingo, and also those inside linebackers. Because when those inside linebackers do come, there's probably four players that are going to pick them up. It's going to be one of the two guards, the center, or one of the backs.
Yep.
That's going to have to pick them up in protection. And there's no way to really gauge until that back steps up in that hole and he's the only thing standing between you and the quarterback. Do you go through him? Do you go around him? And you can only do that when there's pads on.
Let me ask you a question, because another one that I got was, which side of the ball are you most confident in, offense or defense? And that actually, for a second, I had to pause on that. And what I
did as well.
I'll let you answer, and then I'll say
sure.
What I said.
I am most confident in the defense.
Okay.
Right now. And a lot of the reason is because of Ray Horton. And I think we return and have a solid front seven on paper and the resume of the individuals that will make up that front seven. Now, Joe Hayden back, Tremont Williams back to the player that we know he can be at corner. I like that a lot. And I think at safety, we've got guys who are hungry and have a lot to prove at safety. When you go over to the offensive side of the football, I pondered it simply because Hugh Jackson is calling our plays, and Hugh Jackson is our leader. And I think it takes a lot of question out of my mind because I know what a creative, great play caller he is. But the reason why I'll say the defense is I will discount the question at quarterback. You know, RG3, can he take the steps that we need him to take in this Hugh Jackson offense? And then I'll even discount furthermore is who's going to step up and play wide receiver for us and be our go-to guy? We know it's going to be Corey Coleman, but who else? Because I think you have Barnage. We essentially have our starters outside of a position battle at right tackle at the offensive line,
yep.
And we have our two running backs.
Yep.
So I question more about the offense than I do the defense. That's why I'll say right now the defense.
So it's interesting, and I went the offense, and I went solely based on the fact that I think Hugh Jackson is such an offensive genius, and the staff that's on the offensive side of the ball with Pep Hamilton, with Kirby Wilson, with Al Saunders is going to get the absolute best out of it, and I believe the game talent is close. Obviously, we don't know exactly what, you know, we don't know who's going to be, as you said, the number two receiver. We don't know what we're going to get out of the quarterback position. But I know that the scheme that Hugh Jackson is going to produce in a game where the chess match is almost as important as the execution on it, I think we're going to be way ahead in the chess match category on the offensive side of the ball here. So I felt good about the offense. But these kids at the Hawkins Sports Camp today had a lot of great questions. They obviously were curious about RG3. So let me ask you this. What do you think about RG3 headed into training camp? I believe he will be the starter. I believe he got better, and I believe that it's ultimately going to come down. His ceiling is going to be as high as he is able to quickly read and make decisions from the pocket.
I agree. I think RG3 will start and end training camp as the starter, taking us into week one. There are things that I need to see that I think some of the negative connotation about RG3 throughout OTAs and minicamp and what might be looming out there is just that we need to see more, and we need to see him, you know, dot the I and cross the T of playing the quarterback position, which you can't always do in an OTA or minicamp setting. And it's the little things. It's the mechanics. It's the technique. It's the footwork. He has the arm. He has the mind. We believe he has the players, you know, to make the plays. It's just the little things. And I'm not going to say that he's going to be this, but his ability to manage a football game, you know, to manage Hugh Jackson's offense, which we know is going to be diverse and unique by itself, we need a guy who can manage it. I think RG3 can do that. But the one thing I don't want to see is at first bit of adversity. That's, you know, a free blitzer up the middle, or a guy coming unscathed off the edge, or pass protection breaks down, and we see him revert back to 2012 RG3 running for his life, which is fine. Every now and again, we loved that about Johnny Manziel when he got out of the pocket, right?
Sure.
Until he, you know, throws it across his body, you know, into double coverage, things like that. Throw the ball. Okay, break the pocket. You survive. You're alive. Now get rid of the football.
Yep.
To your teammate, or throw it into the first row or the neighbor's backyard. I don't care.
We've seen some of the neighbor's backyard throws, but I think this offense, the scheme is going to be excellent. I think if, you know, the Browns get the right personnel, get a break maybe later this summer and get a, you know, certain flashback, that would be great for this offense and you could get excited about it. But as I was telling the kids today, I really think you're just going to see a better overall product on the field and one that you can be proud of at a time when right now Cleveland, you know, sports are flying high.
Yes.
Tribe 11 in a row, Cavs champions, and the Browns, I think, are going to do their best to get going.
I think that in year one for Hugh Jackson, and this isn't, you know, this is my what I believe to be true. This fan base would love, and I've said this time and time again, would love to show up to First Energy Stadium in the last 6 weeks of the season, or 8 weeks of the last half of the season, and have a 50-50 chance of winning or losing.
That's all you want.
That's all you want. You know, right. It's I know we can go in and we can match up with this team or that team and go toe-to-toe with them. And as I said with the gym, I don't have a problem. You'll lose some close games because you're young, you're inexperienced, it's not all here yet, which we believe to be true.
Right.
But let's bloody the nose of whatever team that comes in here so they understand the brand of football that we play here in Cleveland and have them limping on the bus. Yes, they got the victory. Good for them, but they'll remember who we are and how we play. And we get the best opportunities against those teams twice a year, once here and once at their place, and that's inside our division. So we can change the guard slightly by we'll get beat by a better Steelers team, but let's ruin their season and break Roethlisberger or Antonio Brown or Le'Veon Bell. So
we
it alters who they
him.
Are.
That's
you know,
right.
That's it.
No, yeah, it's an attitude. It's a will. It's an enforcement. I said, I think in the NFL, you know, not only do you have to have the talent, but I think for the most part, the talent between teams is fairly close. I think quarterback talent is the big disparity around the league. Some teams have them, some teams don't. But I think it's about coaching, game planning, and how the players believe in that, and therefore what their effort shows and their ability to execute shows on Sunday. And I think last year there wasn't as much belief, which led to maybe mixed, I don't want to say effort because everybody out there was giving it their all, but mixed ability to maybe be as efficient as you'd want to be because of some of the confusion with the scheme, et cetera. Whereas this year, I think when you see the Browns, you are going to get complete effort all the time.
Yeah, and I think when we've talked about it, you know, time and time again about how different this staff is from past staffs and the amount of experiences, I believe these players are open-minded and ready to learn and soak up how you win. Because the reason why is they've been there and done it. Kirby Wilson with AP and Ray Horton, every stop he's been and as a player. Hugh Jackson, every place he's been as an offensive play caller and a quarterback guru and so on and so forth. So you're going to believe based on the track record. And I think in some cases, as a professional athlete, you disc and go, I've been in this league longer than you've been a coach. Why should I believe you? When that adversity hits,
yep.
That voice, if that voice is profound in that room, which I believe it to be true that it is with Hugh Jackson and this staff that he's put together, you will never discount who these coaches are and their experience when it comes to crunch time and they're telling you, I need these things out of you. I'm going to do it my way.
Right.
And we saw what that, I'm going to do happens. It my way looks like. And that's 3-13.
3-13 and a lot of unhappy peoples. We heard some of the things that Carlos Dansby said on his way out of here. Well, we want to know from you what are the most pressing questions. We got some great questions from the kids down there at the Hawkins Sports Camp today. It was fun. I want to hear the questions from you guys. Coming up on today's show, by the way, at 1:30, we will have Jackie Moon. No, I'm just kidding. John Moon Mullen will be with us. It was supposed to be with us yesterday. We'll talk a little about Buddy Ryan. We have got the reaction part 3 of Matt Bowen's articles on why the NFL is broken. And it was funny. One of the things you said earlier was technique. And he thinks the new CBA is causing a massive erosion of technique. And I think one of the things that I want you to talk about when we get to that around 2 o'clock or maybe even in this hour is what really does technique mean? And because I know it can be position-specific, scheme-specific, play-call-specific technique. That's, I think, a term that's out there a lot in the NFL people don't know. Plus, we're going to do System Guy or Star. We'll take your questions as well. Tweet us at Nathan Zagura, at Browns_Daily, at MattWilhelm35. Use the hashtag AskCBD here. Off and rolling on Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, 216-578-0850 if you want to call us up. Some good Buddy Ryan stories, and I think yesterday there was a lot of Buddy Ryan and Pat Summitt love around the world as the sports world lost a couple of legends yesterday. Today, obviously, there's a bunch of stuff out there. It's great to know that it's not about a Cleveland Brown out there on in the world, which is good. I read actually an article on Pro Football Talk talking about off-season and just the league has been, you know, cracking down on, you know, obviously certain behaviors, et cetera, and the kind of people that they want in the NFL, et cetera, and that there actually has been a pretty good decrease in terms of the off-season issues, and this has been a very good year for that going forward. And so you look at the stats for it for the last couple of years, it's pretty amazing that since January 1st, there have been 9 player arrests this year. Last year, there were 13. 2 years ago, 21, 2013, 29. So that's pretty good.
Very good.
They're making a lot of progress there as they keep trying to clean up the league. So they are doing something.
It is, but I mean, ironically, you know, on the other side of the point, yes, they're cleaning up the league, and Roger Goodell has done everything he can to clean up the game from a safety standpoint. I think concussions are up, though. And I think that's something as they're going to continue to tweak, you know, time in, time out. And I believe as social media becomes the prominent way to communicate, you know, between player and fan and the following that comes via social media, you look at guys like LeBron and their brand and what they represent, and even look at, you know, JR wanting the reality TV show and so all those things, you know, are who they are outside of the sport. And one off the field, you know, domestic violence, DUI, drug charge, gun charge can all affect their brand. It affects their ability to not only, you know, or it limits their ability to make money in their sport, but it highly limits their marketability and making money off the court. You know, you figure you play 82 games, you play 16 games, you know, maybe more if you go to the playoffs, you play 162 games. You only play games so many days in a year, but then you're yourself when you're off the field. And that domestic violence or that DUI or that gun charge or that drug charge, they don't go away. Nope. So they affect your bottom line as well. And I think it's the awareness that and the emphasis that the NFLPA and the NFL are putting on those things. And I think it's the individuals, you know, like Warren Sapp and Chris Carter and their ability to go to these rookie symposiums and these, you know, former players that are reaching out saying, hey, I did it wrong. Don't be like me. Because this is how it's affected my life. Because when you think, I mean, even just take a guy like Warren Sapp or Chris Carter, to use them as an example. You think great player, you know, touchdown machine, Minnesota Viking, you think Randy Moss, you think Philadelphia Eagle, and you think drug user, you know, yep. Or drug abuser. And I mean, he's self-admitted, you know, when he's walking the path now, but that's just something that will never go away. And you look at Warren Sapp and everything, you know, filing bankruptcy and, you know, off the field issues sure. And, you know, yeah, Hall of Famer, great player. You want to start a franchise? I want him at nose tackle or I want him at three technique, but he's also this guy. And for those guys to convey how it affects your career, not only in the short term, but in the long term, is truly being emphasized, you know, by the right people.
You know, and it was funny coming up talking to the kids today. They asked me about Josh Gordon. And I said, you know, Josh Gordon can only play in the NFL if Josh Gordon wants to play in the NFL. And he places that priority above anything. And I said, you know, let this be a lesson to you that no matter what your talent level is, unless you're fully dedicated to it and staying within the rules and not, you know, PEDs or drugs or whatever that's going to make prevent you from doing it, you can't reach the highest levels and be successful. Your talent is enough, but you can't utilize your talent if you can't get yourself on the field or get yourself, in this case, reinstated into the league.
Right.
And, you know, I think for, you know, a guy like Justin Blackman's never going to play again.
Nope.
And was a tremendous talent.
Yes.
Tremendous talent for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he's not going to play the game again. Mike Freeman at the Bleacher Report had an article today and it's like kind of the top 10 little stories from around the league. We talked about one of them there. The other one, number five, Aaron Rodgers has the look. From a Packers offensive player, quote, Aaron is as dedicated as I've ever seen him. He was always dedicated, but it's even more now. I think he's going to have a career year. He's been miffed about the talk throughout last season that he's taken a step back.
I don't believe – I never heard anybody say that he took a step back. And –
I don't think he did.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you and I both believe had the Hans team just recovered the football, he may have a second Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
And I think he did everything that he could last year to keep them in the playoffs. It's just
no Jordy, broken down line.
Correct. You know, and Larry
Fat
Fitzgerald.
Eddie
Lacy. Yeah, right. So a lot of things are happening, you know, to that Green Bay Packer organization. And I just think it's the proper time. And his window, he's still smack dab in the middle of his window.
Don't you think, though, sometimes a player that great? I mean, let's look at LeBron James. LeBron is a great player, one of the very best and probably the best in the world right now. He needed that little extra, whether it was real or not. And in this case, it was very real. But the jabs from Klay Thompson and the jabs from Draymond Green to get him fired up to the point where he was – ready to take over and be that great. Do you think this is a case where Aaron Rodgers is trying to, like, you know, Michael Jordan talked about it, perceived slights, or he would create slights in his head to get that competitive edge. And maybe Aaron Rodgers has been so good that he, for so long, which he is, they asked me today, who's the best quarterback in the league? And I said, there are only two, and it's Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers for me, and nobody else is close.
Correct.
Then maybe he needs that little bit of extra motivation. When you played with him, you know, first of all, he's got his brother on the Bachelorette, which could be distracting. Number two, you know, what was he like as a guy when you played with him? Because I imagine he's not, doesn't strike me as the same kind of guy as like a Tom Brady. Who's
he's not.
Obsessed with it
what
and
you see,
demanding.
What you see from a personality standpoint, what you see of Aaron Rodgers, you know, in the media or from the media or in the State Farm commercials is actually who he is. That, like, quiet yet quirky, you know, kind of, you know, comedy, you know, throwing a, you know, a one-liner jab at you. Never really going to be the life of the party, but he's never going to just sit there like a bump on the log.
Right.
And I think that's why he's been embraced by that franchise, you know, the smallest market in the NFL. And that's also what allows the players on that offense who probably look at Aaron Rodgers when they walk in for the first time as a free agent or a draft pick and go, oh, it's Aaron Rodgers. You know, I can't dare talk to him. But then Aaron Rodgers will be the guy that come over and talk to you. So he comes down off that pedestal and is just one of the guys. And it's so relatable. And that's how, I mean, I lived it firsthand. I was on the other side of the ball and a late addition to the team. And one of the first guys besides AJ Hawk and maybe the special teams coach to like come up and actually like have a conversation with me was Aaron Rodgers. And like day two invited me to like a Friday night dinner, which he was doing with his offensive lineman every Friday night and a speckling of other guys on the Packers. So I was like, I called my wife and I'm like, Aaron Rodgers invited me to dinner.
So I'm going to go.
So I was like, yeah, of course. It was amazing. I mean, and he was why he and I's bond, you know, grew and why he was one of the first ones to talk to me. And I played poker until 12:30 the night before the Super Bowl, you know, in his room, you know, in Dallas, Texas. It's just one of those things. That's who he is. And like I said, that's where you get – he gets the buy-in of the offensive linemen with that don't have names as they, you know, cycle through offensive linemen. Or he gets the buy-in of whatever receiver outside of Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson or whatever tight end he's going to throw the ball to. He just gets their buy-in because he comes down to their level and goes – and you can see the same thing, the same attributes from Tom Brady, maybe on a different level.
Sure.
Because it's just get me a guy that can catch me the football. Get me a guy that can catch me the football. Get me a guy that's going to be here on this play but can also catch the football. It doesn't care what the back of the nameplate says or how much money they're being paid.
It only
helps.
Not one bit. And Aaron Rodgers definitely, I think he does have a little chip on his shoulder. I think that Packers team does this year. They want to get back there. And, you know, honestly, if you look at the Green Bay Packers and they have Aaron Rodgers and they only win one Super Bowl with him, I think that's an organizational failure. And I think it's on them for not making enough moves in free agency to do it because he is – you know, if not the best quarterback in the NFL right now, he's one of the best.
Can you say the same thing about LeBron as a Cav moving forward? Organizational failure if he only wins one as a Cavalier.
No, because at the time when he was there before, I think maybe obviously they didn't put the right pieces around him.
I'm talking from
now
14 forward.
I don't know. It's tough because.
So right now he's 50-50.
It's kind of like a renaissance period in the NBA. There are just so many good teams. You know,
are there really?
The Warriors are good. The Spurs were really good. The Thunder obviously were solid.
But all
the
that's
good
changing.
News for him is that in the East,
right,
there is nobody. So he should be able to get to the finals. So
the
yeah,
one
they
that,
should win more than one.
And that's the one thing that I will say. LeBron James does not control the 82-game schedule. LeBron James doesn't control who he plays when. LeBron James doesn't control anything in free agency other than what he's doing for his own team. LeBron James doesn't control how good or bad the Eastern Conference is. He wanted to come back to Cleveland. Cleveland's in the Eastern Conference. Now he's in the Eastern Conference. He can't control that. And I think, as you saw in the past 2 years, his ability to get to the finals is uncanny and goes back to, you know, Jordan and Russell and Magic and so on and so forth in getting to the finals. And, of course, he's probably not as happy as he is with his finals record. At now what, 3-6? But
3-4 now, right?
3-4. Isn't he been to 6 straight finals?
Yeah.
Three championships.
And then the one before. So 3-4 total. in seven.
Three and four. Okay, yeah. So he's won three titles in 7 years.
Yep.
Okay. So I guess my whole point is he doesn't control who he plays, but the great thing about it is he's got to take advantage, and I think the general manager for the Cavaliers have to take advantage of the window with LeBron at his best to put the pieces around him to do it again and again and again until Kyrie becomes that guy.
I think that they will find a way. They're going to be there. It's going to be a matter of if they can win another seven-game
right.
series. Because I think all these other teams are going to retool and make themselves better. Where Kevin Durant ends up, obviously, is a big wild card. If he goes to the Warriors or the Spurs, that would make them kind of like superpower
teams. And I heard Harrison Barnes to Philadelphia.
Fine.
No, I know.
Goodbye.
I'm just saying that would be something changing. What else would change with Golden State?
I mean, look, Iguodala and Bynum aren't getting any younger, and I read an article that said that if they were to sign Kevin Durant, they'd have to get rid of either Iguodala or Bynum, or Bogut, I'm sorry, which would be, in my mind, would be Bogut, and you find a cheap center to play.
So, and then the Spurs, did Duncan opted in or opted out?
That I don't know.
I know Parker and Ginobili are going to be
the opting out at this point, just like...
is for more money. It's like LeBron.
Right. It's not that they're leaving.
Right.
It's just an opt-out.
But Duncan's almost done. But Ginobili's almost done.
Yeah,
Parker's
on their
almost
last
done.
Legs.
Right?
They're
Marcus on
their last Aldridge legs.
Marcus Aldridge is. But they got Kawhi. Boris Diaw's kind of. He's an elder player as well and a role player.
Yep.
So that's the changing of the guard in San Antonio. You look at the Thunder, whether Durant stays, whether Durant goes. You know.
He's the big.
The Thunder could literally go from third to sixth or seventh in the Western Conference without Durant.
Yeah,
even with Russ.
Right, if they lose one of those guys.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, either one of them.
And then who's the last one we mentioned? That was it. Golden State, San Antonio, and the Thunder.
Those are the power teams right now.
Right.
You just never know if somebody lines up another mega squad, but right now that's the way it looks. Yes, they certainly have an opportunity.
What about New York now? Derrick Rose and Carmelo?
Carmelo's not a winner, I don't think.
Okay. He's won a national championship, by the way.
I know, Syracuse. Not in the National Basketball Association, he hasn't.
True.
He's a great Olympian, though, by the way. All right, when we come back, Buddy Ryan, one of the greats in the National Football League, we passed away yesterday. John Moon Mullen will be with us from CSN Chicago. He's written a couple books on the Bears. We'll get some of his best stories about that 85 Bears team when we come back.
many times have we been here before? How many pieces?
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. But I
hate to see you cry. Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm. We go to the Ohio Business Machine Hotline and bring in John Moon Mullen from CSN Chicago, who's written a couple books on the Bears, Tales from the Chicago Bears Sidelines and The Rise and Self-Destruction of the Greatest Football Team in History, the Bears, and Super Bowl 20. John, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, no problem, guys. How are you doing?
Good. I know yesterday a busy day for you with the passing of Buddy Ryan. What are some of your best Buddy Ryan memories?
Oh, boy. You know, it's hard to measure him because I don't think people understand what an influence he was on the game. The colorful, the players themselves. I mean, everything from Mike Singletary's eyes to whooping to he allowed personalities to be personalities and yet weld them into a single unit. You know, Mike Singletary's great comment. Well, two of them. One of it was about Buddy. He said, "You know, without Buddy Ryan, I'm just a guy."
Yeah, I saw that.
Which may be modest, but that's very telling, and a lot of these guys felt that way, which is amazing when you think of these strong personalities. And Singletary also said, you know, Eagles don't flock, and this one time they did. Not every coach could have worked with that team. It's sort of an overall impression. And as I've been mentioning before different times, when you pull the camera back and look at him, you don't realize how much he really affected the game of football. And I was talking to Mike Ditka yesterday. Mike said, flat out, says, "John, the guy changed the way the game was played." And I hadn't quite thought of it in that magnitude. You know, we're so used to talking about Belichick, and we've seen Dick LeBeau and, you know, these great schemers. But Buddy was every bit of that and more. You know, he changed at the time when the league was still predominantly a running league back
right.
in the early 60s when he was the D-line coach for the Jets. It was still 53-55% run. And Buddy understood it that way back then, watching Lee Eubank obsessed with keep taking care of Joe Namath, the name of the game is get the quarterback. So even at the time, Buddy was way ahead of his time. And I think people don't realize how much of an influence he had, maybe because his head coaching tenure sort of overshadowed what he had done as an assistant. That's kind of an odd situation. But,
right.
Yeah, I think I think a guy arguably belongs in the Hall of Fame as an assistant coach, where he LeBron does.
Yeah, I agree. And John, outside of, you know, Rex and Rob for right this moment, what coach or former player of Buddy's that has now become a coach do you think is most exemplifying some of what Buddy Ryan meant as a coach, both as an assistant and as a head coach in the NFL?
Ooh, you know, if I had to pick one, it might be Ron Rivera.
That's what I was going to guess. That's why I hoped you said that.
He gets it. And, you know, and he wasn't one of the exalted. He wasn't Wilbur. He wasn't Otis Wilson. He wasn't Singletary. He wasn't at the level of a lot of those guys. But he is a player's coach in the way Buddy was. You know, if you're alone with Chico long enough, he's got linebacker eyes. You know, once some psychological study looked at different football positions and what type of person they are, and they said if you needed an assassin, a guy who would go behind enemy lines, be cool under all kinds of pressure, it's a linebacker. They have this something. Chico has that, and deep down, that is exactly what Buddy had. I mean, he was colorful, but he was so disciplined. You know, you don't think of that team being disciplined. They absolutely were. He made them all students of the game, which is another thing. You know, George Ryan kind of brought George Allen, who also had the Chicago roots, really brought in a lot of the sophistication and defensive scheming. Well, Buddy really brought in something we think of almost take for granted now, which is everybody on defense knows everybody else's assignment. You sort of take that for granted now. Well, Buddy was the first guy that really preached that and made Otis Wilson learn it. You know, Otis yelled at him, why am I taking all these stupid exams for? I'm out of college. And Buddy said, I want you to know everything that everybody is doing. And I think there's another example of how Buddy kind of changed things we take for granted today. They weren't back then.
Talking with John Moon Mullen from CSN Chicago about the late, great Buddy Ryan. And that season, that defense, dominant. We were going through the stats yesterday. 64 sacks, 64 turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
How were they? I mean, you talk about Buddy Ryan and the scheme, but what was it like to cover that team and see this domination week in, week out. We looked up the others. I mean, they only give up 7.4 points a game, I believe, at home throughout the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, amazing.
Well, it was funny. At one point, in fact, when I did that book on the rise of self-destruction of the greatest team, there was an incredible symmetry. I went back and looked. I forget what stretch of games there were. Seven games over some period. And the Bears' opponents over that stretch of games, the combined opponents scored 27 points. Over that same stretch of games, the Bears' defense scored 27 points.
It's amazing.
Interceptions, fumbles for touchdowns, safeties. It was they scored as much as the Bears' opponents did. You knew you were watching something incredible. And Buddy was the guy that could do it. He was not so – he had an incredible ego, but it was not the ego that got in the way of things. I would even say, and Vic could kind of admit it, you know, the way Mike let his get in the way sometimes. But he wasn't about that. You know, he really did cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war, and he was happy to watch them do the work.
And again, I said we'd come back to Rob and Rex. How do you think that, you know, Rex and his personality and Rob and his big personality, but he's bounced around a little bit, as has mm-hmm. Rex. Have they truly carried on the defense that their father created in the NFL, or have they kind of put their own little nuances, you know, on them in their different stops based on personnel?
Well, I think the last couple words you said there are everything, based on personnel. You know, it's amazing how great you become as a coach if you get the right horses. I don't know that Buddy's 46 would have been what it was if he didn't have Dan Hampton, who was basically unblockable. You know, Buddy took a defensive end, a 6'5" defensive end, and dropped him in over the nose, and he couldn't be single blocked. He kept everybody busy. I'm not sure that those guys, you know, that Rex and Rob have that kind of talent, and Buddy would say the same. I think it's a lot easier to be a great coach if you've got Wilbur Marshall, who was the best. The teammates said he was the best player on that defense. There were so many great players that even when they changed scheme the next year under Vince Tobin, which Hampton once said, well, it turned a bunch of guard dogs and or tack dogs into guard dogs. And it was, you know, it took the whole mindset in the wrong direction. But the talent was so good that it was even better statistically than it was under Buddy. So I don't think we should underestimate or undervalue how great the players are. The scheme is only as good as the guys that can run it. And, you know, and like I often said too, like about diets. Hey, if we follow every diet, you follow it the way it's written, just right, they all work. But you have to have the talent to pull it off. That applies to defense too.
Certainly does. Talking with John Moon Mullen from CSN Chicago. Now, one of your books, Tales from the Chicago Bears Sidelines, I'm sure you have some good ones. Now, Buddy's probably most infamous moment on the sideline involved Kevin Gilbride, but what was he like on the sidelines when he was with the Bears? Because, you know, you see the pictures, they carried him off the field. This guy was loved.
Yeah, that never happened. I mean, it really, yeah, I think somebody said that was the only time that an assistant has ever been carried off on the shoulders. And in fact, the funny part, I think, of that was either McMichael or whoever it was, they were going to pick Buddy up first, and somebody said, geez, you better grab Ditka, too. He'll get pissed. Because it would look kind of weird if the defensive coordinator got carried off. But it was that kind of a theme. But now there's just, you know, it's funny. I'm just thinking all of a sudden, paraphrasing the old joke about the lifelong football fan leads a good life, and then he dies and goes up to heaven. And St. Peter meets him up there, and he goes, you know, you've led a great life, son. Why don't you come in? And I know you love football. We got some great football here. I'll show you around. So you go over on the practice field, and there's this guy that's number 34 running around. He's farming people. He's running for yards. He's catching the ball. And the guy goes, St. Peter, is that? Yeah, son, that's Walter Payton. They go a little farther, and there's a quarterback. He's throwing lasers, and he's got a flat top, and he's high top, black shoes, and number 19. And the man says, St. Peter, is that? St. Peter says, yep, that's Johnny Unitas. So they go a little farther. Now they go over by the defense, and they're terrorizing quarterbacks, and they're blitzing all over the place, and things, you know, they're fur flying. And there's a coach over there who's calling players by numbers rather than their names. And he's kind of quipping one-liners, and the fan says, St. Peter, is that Buddy Ryan? And St. Peter goes, kind of No, it's God. He just thinks he's Buddy Ryan. So I think if you'll give him, we'll put him on a pedestal because I think, frankly, he deserves it. And that's how his players treated him, too.
Yeah, they certainly did. And that's what's so cool to see about it. And a guy that, you know, it was funny in the media age that we live in now. And I know you've covered the Bears for a very, very long time. You know, a lot of the stuff that parts of Buddy Ryan's career, especially as a head coach, we were talking about yesterday when he did the fake kneel down and kept running up the score. That just stuff today would have sent people into a tizzy, you know, with the 24-hour news cycle and everybody would talk about it and Twitter, et cetera. Just that Buddy Ryan would have been either a hero or villain or probably both, depending on what side of the coin you were on with him in today's media age.
For sure. Well, think about what he said right before the NFC Championship game against the Rams. Now, here they get ready to play the Rams. This is Eric Dickerson has just run for 240 yards against the Cowboys in the divisional round. And, you know, I asked Buddy, you know, how are you going to handle Eric Dickerson? And Buddy says, hell, we're going to hit him so hard he's going to fumble three times. Whoa, nobody says that kind of stuff anymore. And sure enough, they hit him hard enough, he fumbled. He fumbled twice, and Buddy said, wow, I was a little off. Go the heck. You just don't have a guy like that. Can you imagine that 85 team in this media world? There was no ESPN then. Can you imagine what it would be now?
Oh, my God. The Super Bowl shuffle would be out of control.
Oh, my goodness. It was out of control then. Would you imagine what it would be? Like Richard Dent said, it was a lot of fun. Hey, we got a bunch of guys who got to dance around in tight pants.
We'd have kids in today's instead of dabbing, they'd be Super Bowl shuffling.
They would be.
Oh, they'd be shuffling, yeah. Otis Wilson said he was walking somewhere, I think even in London, and some little kid goes, Mommy, there's Mama's boy Otis, which was his nickname from the Super Bowl shuffle. So, Yeah, so, I mean, Buddy and those guys achieved what they did in a time. Again, media was big, and that was the era of when Pete Rozelle really put the NFL on the map. You cannot even comprehend what it would have been like in this day and age. So it's certainly fortunate, and maybe it tells you how big the personalities really were.
Absolutely,
it wasn't what it is now. Look at what and we're still talking about it.
And I think another thing too is back then personalities were a little more raw and real. They weren't as coached. They weren't as dissuaded from saying what was actually on their mind. You know, I think now a lot of times you see the interviews post game, during game, you know, pre game, and a lot of it is stuff that people are coached to say and make sure they don't ruffle any feathers, when back then that's exactly what Buddy wanted to do, and I think he thought he was giving himself some type of a competitive advantage by doing so.
Yeah, and I think ultimately in the NFL, and Buddy was all part of that. I mean, that was the personality that the NFL, they developed it. You know, Pete Rozelle wanted the personality. He didn't want Jim McMahon wearing a headband that had the long name on it, but that's something else entirely. But no, that they understood. He understood that was the way to grow the game, and it's arguably they could not have picked a better accelerant for that blaze than the 85 Bears and Buddy Ryan and his group.
Your other book, The Rise and Self-Destruction of the Greatest Football Team in History, The Bears in Super Bowl 20. I can say I'm not from the Chicago area, so I certainly knew about the rise and the domination. The self-destruction, what did you mean by that?
Oh, they were so, so good. And well, one of the things that happened, and people kind of forgot, why didn't they win more than one, was Buddy left.
Yep.
That was not the same team. After that, the game, he went to coach the Eagles, and they were, 10-6, 10-6, and he never won a playoff game, but they were, he had Jerome Brown and Clyde Simmons and Reggie White. I mean, he knew how to bring two defensive talent together. But, yeah, they just... Jay Hilkenberg told me that in the locker room afterwards, those guys were getting into arguments over, you know, those hats, everybody's wearing a championship hat after whether it's the LeBron or whether it's, you know, everybody's got the hats that are all made up and everybody puts them on. These guys, he said, we were arguing about, we've been into pushing matches over three hats in the locker room. He said, at that moment, I knew it was over. And it really was. I mean, they were so close, but never even got back to a Super Bowl after that.
Yeah.
So that was what Jay always said. It was kind of, we did it to ourselves. There was nobody really better. I mean, and I hear the reality, guys. You kind of forget that was, I would say, the golden age of the NFC. That was Parcells' Giants. That was Walsh's 49ers.
Yeah.
That was the Bears. It was Joe Gibbs' Redskins. You didn't have to fall very far, and those white sharks were all over you. So
right.
they just lose a little bit, and any one of those teams could and did beat them.
Yeah, didn't it? It went Niners 84, Bears 85, Giants 86.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember 87 than the Niners. I think we're 88, 89.
Yeah, I think Redskins are in there.
Redskins.
With, they also turned beating the AFC by 40 points.
They certainly did. Yeah, I grew up in the Bay Area, so I remember when the Niners won 55-10 on Denver down in New Orleans very, very well.
But you have Doug Williams throwing, five touchdowns in one quarter in one of those games for the Redskins. Yeah, that was the golden age. So to the big point, you know, why did they sell? What was the self-destruction? They didn't have to lose much before
they were overtaken.
Any one of a great – there were a lot of great teams that could have overtaken them. That's what happened.
What was the reaction like in Chicago yesterday to the news of Buddy's passing? Did it rekindle a lot of good old memories, something that, you know, probably wasn't at the top of people's minds generally, but, you know, kind of bring back the memories of that 85 team?
Yeah, and that's a good observation. It was, and I think what I was hearing a lot of and reading a lot of, and I'd talked to people myself, it brought back memories for the guys who were there. So you really enjoyed hearing Singletary. You heard Mike talking about that, or you heard Bicka talking about it. You know, it wasn't just remembering Buddy. It was hearing him remembered by the people that were close to him really restored. Oh, you know, that was special. It wasn't just athletic achievement. You guys remember if you saw the 30 for 30 segment on the 85 team, that was really a eulogy to Buddy. It was mostly about Buddy Ryan, and you saw, you know, the letter that Buddy wrote to the team or to his defensive guys. You remember the last part of that show, and they went from one player, Dent, to Hampton, to Singletary, to each one after Otis Wilson, each one reading a line or two, intercutting, and there were tears in every one of those guys' eyes. Well, yesterday, when there were so many people talking about it, that's what you remember. It wasn't just the athletic part of it. It was special. There was more to it than just winning football games. They had a hell of a time doing it, and it kind of took everybody else along for the ride.
It certainly did. John, we appreciate the time very much as you recounted some of the glory days of the Bears and, of course, Buddy Ryan, and just a fascinating, colorful character, and certainly, as you talked about in the 30 for 30 on him, just a guy that larger than life, and they don't make many like him anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's not right. You get to the pearly gates, so that guy with the whistle over there, that's not Buddy. That's God who thinks he's Buddy, right?
I love that. That was a great story. John, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. John Moon Mullen, strong. Coming strong from CSN Chicago. Knows the Bears very well. Obviously, very fond remembrances of Buddy Ryan. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about technique. We're going to go into the Matt Wilhelm Football 101 School. Also take your phone calls. We've got some tweets coming in as well. We'll get to those 216-578-0850. Hour number two of CBD coming your way.